The concern is about the long-term political, economic, and intelligence value of this data set on young people in the United States.
Microsoft considers adding TikTok. It's Thursday, August 6th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You'll find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, a rare look inside North Korea, learning outside. A campaign announcement delayed, keeping COVID from convicts. Grandparents go to the head of the class. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Microsoft confirmed that it has held talks with Chinese technology company ByteDance to acquire its popular social app TikTok in the United States. Microsoft said it will work with the U.S. government on a deal that they hope will wrap up by September 15th. Matt Dibble has the story.
TikTok has been attracting attention since it was introduced, and not just from teenagers. For over a year, the popular social media app owned by Chinese tech company ByteDance has been under review by the Trump administration for national security concerns. After first threatening to ban the app in the United States, President Donald Trump softened his position Sunday after a phone call with the CEO of Microsoft, which is in talks to buy the company. TikTok has millions of users in the U.S. and is wildly popular with teens, allowing them to share short, self-recorded, often humorous videos with other users. Like other social media apps, Facebook and WhatsApp, it collects data from its users. As big tech has increasingly come under scrutiny for data harvesting in the U.S., the possibility of TikTok user data finding its way to the Chinese government has raised alarm among some U.S. leaders.
I think the concern is about the long-term political, economic, and intelligence value of this data set that you would collect on young people in the United States. And young people, 10 years from now, become middle-aged people. Middle-aged people, some subset of them, end up in positions of authority or in positions of important intellectual property ownership or that sort of thing.
TikTok's meteoric rise has drawn attention for other reasons, too. Best known for viral comedy and dance videos, young activists have used it successfully to support the Black Lives Matter movement and in an online prank played on the Trump campaign. Empty seats at the June re-election rally in Tulsa, Oklahoma, were partly the result of TikTok users organizing to register for free tickets they had no intention of using. Former employees and leaked documents have revealed that TikTok has censored content unflattering to the Chinese government, such as the Hong Kong democracy protests, as reported by the Washington Post and other media outlets. On Monday, President Trump said that TikTok could stay in business in the U.S. under certain conditions.
I don't mind if, whether it's Microsoft or somebody else, a big company, a secure company, very, very American company, buy it.
The once close relationship between Chinese and American tech companies began to erode when smartphone maker Huawei and meeting platform Zoom also found themselves in the crosshairs of American lawmakers for security reasons.
2 years ago, I think there were lots of folks who were of the opinion that it was absolutely inconceivable that the United States and China would be able to sort of disaggregate their supply chain when it comes to technology. And I think many of those people have been surprised at just how far the United States has been willing to go over the last year to do that.
Trump has set a September 15th deadline for a TikTok purchase deal with an American company. Meanwhile, Facebook's subsidiary, Instagram, is preparing to release in the coming weeks a new app that closely resembles TikTok, all of which means the clock is ticking for TikTok. For VOA News, Matt Dibble, San Francisco.
These are among some of the top Asia headlines that you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Thai Army Chief says hatred of nation, bigger threat than virus. India widens China app ban to cover more from Xiaomi and Baidu. 1 year later, human rights violations continue in Indian Kashmir. Modi lays temple foundation stone, marking victory for Hindu Nationalist Party. Vietnam says contagion under control in virus epicenter but spreads elsewhere. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia, as well as the voanews.com website. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington as VOA Asia continues. A new book offers an on-the-ground account of the rewards and roadblocks faced by an American scholar as he engaged one of the world's most closed-off states, North Korea. Jason Strother opens the book in Seoul.
Andre Abrahamian spent much of the past decade working with North Koreans who have never lived outside of Pyongyang's tightly controlled political and economic system. In his new book, Being in North Korea, the former executive director of the international nonprofit organization Chosun Exchange reflects on his efforts to teach business skills and market economic policies to those people.
The idea of using markets and individuals making market choices and participating in ways that benefits them, I think that idea has powerfully taken hold now in North Korea.
Abrahamian was among a small group of experts working for international organizations that have built trust with North Korea. These groups provide humanitarian assistance to the North and have helped guide the government to take steps to open its economy. During some of his 31 trips to North Korea, Abrahamian ran workshops on entrepreneurship and international trade. He says many of his North Korean colleagues want to start their own businesses, but hit roadblocks because of the country's restrictive policies.
The times you feel closest with North Koreans is when you are mutually trying to solve problems that the system has put up.
But Abrahamian says working in North Korea's system can be mentally exhausting. He says people cannot be completely open or honest out of fear that what they say might draw the attention of authorities.
What I really learned is how difficult it is to live in a system where you have to really regulate your own thoughts very carefully, because, you know, thoughts can be dangerous.
Abrahamian argues that despite the frustrations and limitations of engaging with North Korea, it's still a better option than attempting to use military or economic pressure to force the regime to change.
Engagement doesn't solve all the problems. I think that provides more opportunities for individuals to take control over some aspects of their lives.
He adds that Pyongyang's leaders have the tools to keep their system in place for a long time. Jason Strother for VOA News, Seoul.
Students in Indian-controlled Kashmir have had a difficult year. Authorities closed schools in August 2019 after political disturbances in the once semi-autonomous region. Schools opened in February but promptly closed again because of the coronavirus pandemic. As VOA's Arash Arabasadi tells us, students may have found a solution to their education problem right under the sun.
Math students file into their new classroom through this field in Srinagar, Kashmir. Their teacher, Munir Alam, calls education a matter of public health.
The students of this part of the world, Kashmir, they are suffering from mental trauma. They are traumatized. Literally, they are patients. They are the patients of depression.
Last year, authorities closed schools due to heightened political tensions after India revoked the region's semi-autonomous status. Classrooms were reopened in February only to be closed again because of coronavirus. Alam says students have had only 15 days of school since 2019, and it's time to change that.
The driving force of this is to get them out of that depression. They have a habit of leaving their home every day for classes, for teachers, for schools. We have snatched that directly or indirectly by COVID.
Internet restrictions here limit distance learning because of extremely slow network speeds. Students say that's no way to learn.
We used to have online classes, and due to restricted internet, we could not understand well in it. There was buffering, you know, sort of in these online classes, and understanding during that the slow internet was the most difficult task.
It gave us a ray of hope that we can do better in our future, and it will definitely benefit us.
Security lockdowns and information blackouts are not uncommon in Kashmir, but combined with the coronavirus, it all adds up to more than a million students from almost 14,000 schools that haven't had class in almost a year. Munir students say his open-air classroom provides the education that gives them hope for their future. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
Happening now in Asia, a series of explosions resulting in possible casualties rocked a North Korean city near the border with China this week, according to multiple reports. Neither North Korean officials nor state media have commented on the blasts, which reportedly occurred late Monday in a residential area. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad, as always, to have you with us on VOA Asia. Presumptive Democratic Party presidential nominee Joe Biden has delayed announcing his pick for his vice presidential running mate, amid speculation of internal opposition to frontrunner California Senator Kamala Harris. VOA's Brian Patton reports that other possible choices are emerging, who are reportedly seen as more of a team player than Harris, a past rival for the Democratic nomination who clashed with Biden during the primary campaign.
Joe Biden has extended his vice presidential search after reports of growing opposition within the party to top contender California Senator Kamala Harris. While campaigning earlier this year, Biden promised to name a highly qualified woman as his running mate. Since then, there has been increasing calls for him to choose an African-American as racial equality protests have intensified across the country.
It will go a long way to motivating black voters and perhaps those young people that are not so keen on him to come to the polls in November.
As a prominent senator, Harris, the daughter of Indian and Jamaican immigrants and a former presidential candidate herself, seemed the likely choice. But Harris's loyalty and ambition are reportedly being questioned by some key Biden advisors. Harris reportedly has yet to reconcile her clashes with Biden in a past debate, and some close to Biden worry that Harris would put her future presidential aspirations ahead of supporting Biden's agenda. Harris is reportedly meeting this week with the Biden campaign to address those concerns. With Biden leading President Donald Trump in presidential election polls, Democratic strategist Jared Leopold expects Biden to shy away from any controversy in selecting his running mate.
So I think that's what he's likely going to go for, is someone who is going to be a solid pick, someone who's trustworthy, someone who can step in on day one, but also someone who's not going to be a lightning rod for criticism.
Meanwhile, other potential vice presidential candidates are also being vetted. Karen Bass, an African-American congresswoman from California who recently emerged as a top contender, is facing criticism for remarks she made that opponents say praise Cuban leader Fidel Castro and the controversial Church of Scientology. Other African-American contenders include National Security Advisor Susan Rice, who has not run for political office in the past, as well as former Georgia State Legislator Stacey Abrams and Florida Congresswoman Val Demings. Both face questions over lack of experience.
So then you have the problem, or the dilemma of, do you choose someone who has less baggage, who isn't obviously unattractive in some way, but is not known and is not tested and can't prove that they could occupy the Oval Office successfully.
Other women politicians reportedly under consideration are Asian American Senator Tammy Duckworth of Illinois, a disabled veteran of the Iraq War, Michelle Lujan Grisham, the Latina governor of New Mexico, Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren, and Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer. Sources now say Biden could announce his vice presidential pick sometime in the next 2 weeks, just before the start of the Democratic Party convention, where he will be officially nominated as the party's presidential candidate. Brian Patton, VOA News, Washington.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello anytime you're online or on your smartphone. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, and read and share all of the latest from VOA Asia anytime.
This news from VOA Asia. Severe flooding continued in parts of Bangladesh Tuesday with millions displaced. Many houses near the Dalshwari River have been washed away due to rising water levels and erosion on the bank. You'll find this story at VOA 60, VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. We continue now with VOA Asia. Due to a rise in COVID cases, Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti announced that he is considering another strict lockdown just a few weeks after the metropolis began to erase restrictions. One problem is that COVID is rapidly spreading in his state prisons. The issue is so worrying that the state is considering releasing about 8,000 prisoners convicted of minor offenses. VOA's Angelina Bagsarian reports as Anna Rice narrates.
California continues to be one of the coronavirus hotbeds with around 400,000 confirmed cases. The situation is particularly grim inside state prisons. To ease the problem, officials say they're looking at releasing 8,000 prisoners convicted of minor offenses with fewer than 180 days left on to serve. Those over 30 who have health problems will be freed first. About 3,000 California inmates have already tested positive for COVID-19. At least 10 people have died. Critics say inmate transfers prompted the rapid spread of the virus in prisons. Since then, state has replaced its top medical examiner for prisons. Former inmates share their experience in prison during the pandemic.
Scary, dangerous, uncomfortable, unpredictable.
The inmates' relatives and close ones are organizing protests near prison walls.
They're dying in there. They're dying.
Free them all.
Free my baby.
Human rights activists say the situation at the San Quentin prison is no surprise.
San Quentin is a very old, antiquated prison that has a single ventilation system that recirculates air, so it's not a surprise to any of us. Prisons are not meant to be social distance areas.
Vanessa Nelson Sloan is co-founder and director of an organization that helps inmates.
I think, in my considered opinion, would help the most, that is, get every single staff member to wear the masks that they have been provided. Prisoners are required to wear masks. The prisoners can be given a disciplinary violation if they don't. The guards are another situation. That, I think, would be the most important thing we could do in all the prisons right now.
The decision to release prisoners is welcomed at the Life Support Alliance. But many here worry that many ex-inmates will have nowhere to go. And since the state's homeless shelters are packed, that makes them risky places to be as well during the pandemic. For Angelina Bogdasaryan in Los Angeles, California, Anna Rice, VOA News.
How to stay healthy. Wash your hands with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. Scrub thoroughly for 20 seconds. If you cannot wash your hands, use a hand sanitizer. Taking these steps can prevent not only coronavirus, but also colds and flu and other viruses.
Now on VOA Asia, outside of rural areas and some medical practices, telemedicine in the United States has been slow to catch on. But the pandemic social distancing requirement has accelerated the use of telemedicine worldwide, especially primary care visits over video chat. Doctor and patient alike are learning that a lot can be accomplished remotely. Michelle Quinn takes a look.
It's called telemedicine. Since the start of the coronavirus outbreak, doctors and patients are meeting less in person and more on the phone or over video. The goal is twofold. Protect patients by keeping them out of emergency rooms and doctor's offices. Reduce in-person visits so the health system isn't overwhelmed. Dr. Edward Lee now sees more than 20 patients a day this way in Sacramento, California.
But nowadays, with COVID-19, we're seeing it as a necessity. Patients are being kept safe.
The telemedicine revolution, which has been resisted by some doctors, patients, and regulators, is now becoming a reality. Advocates say doctors using video, email, and other technologies increase people's access to medical care by making visits more convenient. You can live in a rural area and consult with an expert without having to drive for hours. Skeptics say a video call shouldn't replace in-person visits, where a doctor can perform diagnostic tests and get the best sense of a person's overall health. Regulators in the U.S. recently gave telemedicine a temporary boost by making it easier for healthcare providers to bill for these virtual visits and giving the green light that using Skype and other technology doesn't violate patient privacy laws. Doctors say that from afar, they can do a lot, such as monitor patients who take their own blood pressure and test their own blood sugar, for example. They weigh whether a patient's medical issue can be handled remotely or in person.
Looking at a rash, looking at a spot on an arm, that's perfect for telehealth because we have the video capabilities. Feeling a bump, whether it's soft or hard, that's a little bit harder, although we can have the patients describe the consistency of something like that. If I needed to do an injection, if I needed to do a minor procedure, I'm not going to be able to do that over video or a phone. And so in those situations where there are urgent needs, we would bring the patient in to see us in the office.
Hospitals use robots like these so that an expert hundreds of miles away can visit with a patient and medical staff over a course of treatment, said Dr. Kathleen Jordan with St. Francis Memorial Hospital in San Francisco.
This one we use for telestroke, which is a much more in-depth neuro exam. And in that one, we would have someone at the bedside with the patient. The neurologist is controlling the camera as well as the angle and really looking at things.
Of course, there are many situations when in-person meetings are best. A cancer diagnosis, an end-of-life discussion.
You know, the video is quite good. We can see each other. We can look at facial expressions. And really develop that connection through there. But it's hard to substitute the ability to hold a patient's hand when talking about these type of difficult situations, to give them a hug or to pat them on the back.
As we continue to practice social distancing, telemedicine likely will change the relationship between doctors and patients. Michelle Quinn, VOA News, Oakland, California.
As parents feel the stress of juggling working from home and homeschooling their children during the COVID-19 pandemic, grandparents are pitching in to help. VOA's Elizabeth Lee has details on how one grandfather is teaching his grandchildren.
Television editor Jason Smith has two daughters, 8 and 4 years old. Like many parents, he has been working from home.
Put the lid on top and fill it with
and trying to teach his children during the pandemic.
It would be totally safe.
I am running homeschool like a lot of people who don't have any experience in this whatsoever. My wife is a teacher, but she's busy teaching all day. And so I am teaching the kids.
For lunch, we have mac and cheese.
David Smith, an academic and Jason's dad, wanted to do something to help, and that's how grandparent school began. Using video conferencing, the first day is a history lesson. He used a map, slides, and this model he built. This battle at the start of the American Revolution shows the fight at the Old North Bridge in Concord between the British and the colonials in Massachusetts.
And then I like to end up with something real, like the diorama, where I could actually point to things that I think may have looked like.
No cars, no trucks.
He tries to describe it in a way that is fun and relevant to his granddaughters.
This happened in a far, far away and a long time ago. Something they were familiar with because the girls have watched Star Wars, at least the first or second, whatever. They've watched some of them. So they know that concept. And so we had the evil empire and the rebels.
They were rude.
You know, they're 4 years old and 8 years old. Both of them had a lot of questions. They had a lot of comments, which kind of surprised me.
Is the water real?
But it was fun. I think they may have learned something.
Smith is already preparing for his next 20-minute lesson on riverboats, using the model he made during the pandemic as a teaching tool. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Los Angeles.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Although our program has concluded, you can continue by following us on Facebook at VOA Asia. We're also on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. We thank you so much for spending some of your time with us today, and we thank those who helped put this program on the air, Managing Editor Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, and Keith Lane. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead. Be safe. Be well.